Welcome to We Mentor Mondays podcast with Nancy. Get inspired. Break through to new dimensions with your peers on the entrepreneurial journey of self-discovery. Learn something new from our stories today. Welcome back, Pete Makalek. Yes, he's here for our second mentoring conversation. Thanks for tuning in to We Mentor Mondays with Nancy. So Pete's a consultant and skill builder who specializes in helping business professionals move forward, build business, and work more effectively and productively with each other. In 2001, Pete, with his co-partner and co-founder Dean Hyers, started Sage Presence around their backgrounds in film, from which they cultivated a unique expertise in storytelling and facilitating performances that truly speak to audiences. Throughout its history, Sage Presence has helped thousands of clients generate confident and influential stage presence to tell powerful stories everywhere from the networking floor to the presenter's stage, ultimately leading to professional advancement and client organizations winning over $4 billion in new business. So welcome for our second mentoring conversation, Pete.
Thanks. Happy to be back.
Yeah, and I'm excited too. Dean will be here in the studio as well, so the audience can have a chance to hear your two different skill sets.
Yeah, yeah.
And kind of your different backgrounds and kind of how you merged them together.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's all really good. So at the end of our last podcast conversation, mm-hmm. you were talking about growing up in a family of eight, you being the youngest. You've got five brothers, three sisters, and your dad kind of had an uncanny route in his career where he was in Chicago, then Kansas City, then ended up in Minneapolis and saw an opportunity in the marketplace where he was in a publishing company and they were going to get rid of three publications. And he saw that as his avenue to really own his own publishing company.
Yes.
And so at the age of 53, he started his entrepreneurial venture. And I think it was a great model for you.
Yeah, I think it was. He was a very intellectual guy, and he always valued education. And one of his prides was that he had put all eight of us through college.
Yeah, that's not easy.
With one kind of bizarre exception. So my one brother, who has the most similar business to his, my dad called him up in his last semester when he had two classes left and said, "I need you now."
Okay.
So, the one guy who ended up most in business doesn't have a bachelor's. But that's okay.
Yeah, he was close enough.
Yeah. So anyway, yes, both my dad and John, the brother that I worked for and the brother without the bachelor's, were probably my biggest entrepreneurial influences.
Hmm.
Yeah. If you had asked me in my teens or probably through half of my 20s, if I was interested in having my own business, I would have said not a million years. Hmm. And if you would have asked me, well, how about sales? You want to get involved in sales? I would have said not on your life.
Yeah.
We were talking last time about the culture of my family and how that, you know, you just what it was like. A very formative message from my dad. So I told you that he was involved in publishing and advertising. Was when I was really young watching TV and a commercial came on, my dad would say, "Now, I just want you to know the people who made those commercials think you're stupid."
Nice.
So, I mean, he was in advertising and he was telling us to be really wary of advertising. And I think that created a fair amount of skepticism in my whole family about not only about advertising and sort of consumerism, but about business and sales kind of at large. It's probably also useful to know there was a fair amount of division between my dad and the rest of the family. There were healthy debates, rigorous debates around the dinner table where my dad would take one side and the rest of us would be on the other side. So
of any particular issue. Where would your mom be in all this?
She mostly observed.
Okay. So did she come to either side in the conversation?
She was generally on the not dad side.
Okay. The kid's side.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I see. And did they stay married?
They stayed married for quite a while, but they split up when the final check on my college education went through.
Okay. And you being the youngest.
Right.
I see.
Yeah. My mom wanted to abandon ship for a while, but kind of stuck it out for the kids.
Okay.
Yeah.
That must have been very hard. Did you know that?
I learned about it a few years later, and it made sense.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. What's funny is kind of the sequel to that story has a happy ending. So my dad was going to move down to Orlando to start his next business, and he found a place to live, and my mom went down to check it out and moved down and then filed her divorce papers. So eventually, basically just said, okay, I'm living in Orlando, and split up with him. And she lived down there for, 25 years, something like that. And then over the course of those 25 years, she and my dad actually got to be on better terms than they ever had during their marriage.
Okay, nice.
Got to be pretty friendly again. And
is that friendly in quotations?
No, okay. just friendly.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, they enjoyed each other's company.
Okay. We'll leave it at that.
Yeah. And and then in their twilight years, my mom's memory started going about 6 years ago, and my dad was living in an assisted living place, and he arranged to have her move into his building, but her memory got too bad. She couldn't stay in it. But in their last couple of years together, they, I think my mom forgot even that she was divorced.
Okay. So there was some reconciliation and some peace about...
And I don't think they ever... it's not like they talked it out or anything. They just...
resolved it maybe within themselves. Yeah. Well, also, with a big family like that, mm-hmm. I mean, it's survival. Mm. And, you have to really work hard and raising 8 kids. I mean, I don't know how you stay connected as a couple, really.
Yeah.
Because everything is in between it.
Right, right. Yeah. And my dad was very career focused.
I think he had to be.
I'm sure he would say that in his defense, but I think he loved it too.
So,
worked out. I mean, it took care of us.
Yeah, you're right.
And, so there were many conversations about sort of his relationship with the family because, I mean, he was kind of aloof and not very emotional.
How has that changed you as a father and as a husband?
Yeah.
Because you're also now found your niche.
Right. It's very much alive in my head, and I see, to be honest, about half the time I feel like, holy cow, I totally am my dad.
Okay.
And I'm kind of making the same mistakes, but only about half the time.
Okay. It seems like you have an awareness.
Yes.
That if you don't do something or differently, that you'll have that kind of disconnect. But you seem to be aware enough that you're willing to make some course corrections.
Yeah, I think probably the biggest thing my dad was not good at was kind of self-awareness. He was just kind of emotionally unintelligent. And I think I got a fair amount of emotional intelligence, both from my mom and my siblings.
Okay.
Yeah.
And in our culture, there's a lot more information about emotional intelligence.
Sure.
I mean, emotional intelligence, the term was coined by Daniel Goleman, and that was in the, I think, the 70s, 60s?
70s, I think.
The 70s.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think I have his first book. And, so if you think about that, you know, and there's that whole field was developed.
right.
you know, from that. I mean, because it used to be psychologists and psychiatrists. I mean, you had to really be messed up to go.
right.
But in the 70s, it became in vogue to like do self-awareness work and to really work on yourself.
Yeah. And only recently has somebody, and I think it was actually Tony Hsieh, the CEO of, the online shoe company. His last name is pronounced Shea, but it's H-S-I-E-H. Wow. Yeah, I know. Crazy. Mm-hmm. Anyway, started pursuing happiness. And up until him, I think, most emotional intelligence work was about like trying to counteract the negative. You know, I think he was the first guy to say, well, why don't we pursue the positive? Why don't we
Yeah, there's a whole field now of happiness? Positive psychology.
Right. Yeah.
Of people studying happiness. And,
right.
Yeah, instead of always focused on...
Which is like,
on,
well, it's about time.
Yeah. Instead of always focus about the negatives, right. experiences.
Right.
And, yeah.
Yeah. So Dean and I have actually incorporated some of that stuff into our work.
Okay.
You know, because emotions were... always at the core of what we were doing. You know, we were always looking at getting people to generate authentic emotion because, well, the way I would put it is everything in a movie is fake except for the emotions. The one thing that has to be real is the emotions that the actors feel, because as soon as an actor does an emotion instead of feels one, you can see it. It breaks the illusion.
Yeah, right. They become out of character.
Yeah.
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 Break character.
When you see a person acting,
yeah,
you know, it breaks everything.
Yeah.
So actors can't do anger. They have to actually get angry.
Yeah.
And same goes for happy.
Yeah.
Same goes for sad. Yeah. So I'm really happy that this emotional intelligence thing came along for a couple of reasons.
Well, and Brené Brown, the audience will not be surprised that I'm talking about her, but you can go to braveleadership.com or courageworks.com. She's a professor at the University of Texas, Houston, and she is in the social work field, and she has studied vulnerability and shame.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah.
I've seen her TED Talks.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
okay, well, TED I've Talks. Taken, all her online coursework. Mm-hmm. Anyways, what resonates is the love and belonging and the connection and what to have within your family.
Mm-hmm.
And there's some ways and exercises. There's a parenting class that she has that's really fantastic. Mm. She makes it real and like concrete so that there's things that you can do to keep the love and the belonging in your family and stay connected.
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of us don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
We have this sense that maybe I'm not as engaged or what should I be engaged? Or if you're male and you're raised by a father who is disconnected,
yeah,
then what does connection look like if all that you've been modeled is disconnection?
Mm-hmm. That's a really good point. I do find myself, you know, asking the question a lot.
Let me give you this piece.
Okay.
Great. Brené Brown wrote, with love and belonging, we cultivate love when we allow our most vulnerable and powerful selves to be deeply seen and known. And when we honor the spiritual connection that grows from that offering with trust, respect, kindness, and affection. Love is not something we give or get. It is something that we nurture and grow. A connection that can only be cultivated between two people when it exists within each one of them. We can only love others as much as we love ourselves.
Mm.
Belonging is the innate human desire to be part of something larger than us. Because this yearning is so primal, we often try to acquire it by fitting in and by seeking approval, which are not only hollow substitutes for belonging, but often barriers to it. Because true belonging only happens when we present our authentic, imperfect selves to the world, our sense of belonging can never be greater than our level of self-acceptance.
Hmm. Wow.
And that is kind of the framework that we can use in our families
mm-hmm.
to say, you know, we do need to work on ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And we do need to be open and honest when things aren't working.
Mm-hmm.
And we do need to have open discussions about where we mess up with our kids.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because those are the skills that we can help them create. They need practice with it. And what better way than in your home?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, I think for a long time, I had the idea that you really shouldn't become a parent until you've resolved all the stuff from your childhood.
Mm-hmm.
I think a quote, that Brené Brown thing that you just read, kind of shows you there's never a point at which you're going to be completely resolved on everything from your childhood. You know, if you want to push off parenthood until then you're probably going to die before you get there.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So the thing that I love about that quote is it's not about resolving everything. It's about recognizing when the stuff from your past is getting in your way.
Yeah.
In creating the relationships now.
Yeah.
Recognizing it so that you can not exactly resolve it right now, but just recognize it so you can get around it right now in the moment.
And do something about it.
Yeah.
And set some boundaries. Yes. Regarding it.
Right, right.
Yeah. Well, I know, like for me, I wanted to change the direction of how I was brought up in how I was in relationship. And so I did not get married till later. Like I came to a point where I was like, I wanted to break the dysfunctional pattern that I felt I had within myself in how to be intimate and connected with someone else in relationship. Like I felt like I trust was difficult. Vulnerability was difficult. I just, you know, was struggled with those issues and getting close to trusting a male.
Oh, wow.
And not like my dad isn't this, you know, wonderful person, but he also had a lot of his own unresolved stuff. And he grew up in, like your dad, you know, in a generation where they didn't have some of the encouragement to really look at yourself.
Yeah, right.
And there wasn't the skills, and there wasn't, and now there's so many more, you know, materials.
The resources.
And, mm-hmm. Right. And so people almost don't have an excuse.
Mm.
For not owning and being accountable themselves.
Mm, mm-hmm.
But, you know, that's a tough one.
Yeah.
We all have to come to.
Yeah. Yeah. And I've heard some people say, yeah, you know, in a way it's like we've made life so hard for us now because there are resources for everything. So we expect everybody to be, you know, healthy this way and this way and this way and this way and this, you know,
yeah,
we put up all these tremendous expectations on ourselves, and it can get absolutely overwhelming and exhausting.
Yeah, we just have to acknowledge we're human beings, we're on this path, we're doing the best we can.
Right, right. Whereas back in my dad's day, it was totally fine for him to be just career-oriented and not have to worry about the family, you know?
Yeah, because that was the woman's job.
Right, right.
Yeah.
And that's what he would say.
Right. I can hear the same conversation going on with my parents, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's woman's work or that's man's work. And, you know, you don't cross the boundaries there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I know for me, I got to a place when I met my husband, Matthew, where, you know, I was older, I was in my 30s. I had started my business and I felt like that was really important for me to be a business owner and to own my own business and be successful on my own financially. Although it was really, really difficult. But I just felt it was really, really important for me to have that confidence within myself. And I wanted to attract a man in my life where I was feeling like I'm at a good place. Might be difficult place because my brother was passing away at the time.
Oh, wow.
But I was in a good place to just connect with someone on that level. I had been in lots of different relationships, but I was just wondering too, how did you resolve the anxiety that you felt in your childhood and your fears?
Oh.
So that you could feel comfortable like being in a relationship with someone.
I met my wife in college.
What's her name?
Jill.
Okay.
Yeah. So I met Jill when I was a freshman in college. You know, I guess it was just sort of a slow motion thing that allowed my anxieties to not get in the way. So we met when I was a freshman and we were friends until I was a junior, actually late in my junior year. So, and she's a year older than me. So she was a senior. I was a junior. Our first date was what was called the President's Ball at the one formal event at my college in the spring.
Okay.
So we started going out just a few months before she graduated. And then when I graduated, she moved down to Iowa City with me when I was going to grad school. So we lived together for a couple of years, then moved back to the cities and lived together for a few more years. And you know, at this point, we were together for about, what, 6-7 years or something. when I thought, well, it's either like get married
or break up.
And it just sort of seemed like easier to, you know, and we were getting along fine.
Okay, so. She will not like hearing that.
No, but she'll recognize it as, yeah, that's pretty accurate.
Okay.
It was. You know,
honesty. You know.
So when Dean is on here, he's going to tell you this amazingly romantic, you know, him getting down on one knee and like thinking about it, you know. And when Jill and I talked about getting married, it was the opposite of that.
Okay. So you're more pragmatic and kind of practical?
Well, and clumsy. And yeah, you know, I asked her out to lunch and just got really embarrassed when I brought it up the subject, and she kind of guessed what was going on about halfway into it.
So
she kind of filled in the blanks. Yeah.
it sounds like a really wonderful way to compliment each other.
Yeah. We're both kind of, Jill has her own anxieties.
Don't we all, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Our anxieties kind of complement each other in a way, I guess. Yeah.
So your kids are a little more grown now since you just talked with them about being, like, when you started the business.
Right.
You had a 3-year-old and one, not quite one.
Right. Yeah. Now I've got.
And Jill was not taking care of those two kids.
Yes.
And so you were the financial breadwinner.
Yeah.
She gave you the go ahead because she would rather see you happy than miserable.
Yep. Yeah. So this was 2001. This was actually September 1st, 2001 that we incorporated.
Okay.
And 10 days after we incorporated, 9/11 happened.
Wow.
And as you might imagine, not many companies were looking to invest in training. Or at the time, we were not only training, we were also looking to make videos, corporate videos.
Okay.
And budgets for that sort of thing didn't exist. So for the rest of that year, we kind of banged our heads against the wall trying to make stuff happen. And it was sort of a combination of the economy being terrible and us just, you know, really starting to wrap our brains around what it is we did.
Yeah, that takes a little bit of effort.
Right.
Yeah.
So I actually had to get a day job in 2002.
Yeah.
And I, you know, the company still existed and the workshop still existed for a few years while we figured things out.
Yeah.
And so I got a day job for, I think, 3.5 years.
Yeah.
And the kind of the good news about the company starting that way was we're able to tell people that we doubled our business every year for about the first, actually, 7 years or so. Yeah. I left my day job and that felt like another big risk.
Yeah.
You know? So it was another
because then you needed to be all in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
And tell us a little bit more about your work.
Well, so what we do is...
So like, how does this fit with your life purpose?
Okay. And again, this is... some of this is sort of retroactive.
As you reflect on it, it's exactly, a little more clear?
Yes. Yeah, so I was telling you that I wanted to get involved in film because it made an impact on people.
Yeah.
What really I recognize matters to me is making an impact on people. I think the definition of meaning is in the impact that you make on human beings.
Yeah.
So if you want your life to make meaning, you want to make a difference to somebody, not you.
Yeah, right.
And so what I experienced over the course of first the acting workshop and then the business was we were really making a meaningful difference to the people that we worked with. You know, I could literally see people walking out of a session with confidence where they didn't have confidence before, where they believed in themselves, where they didn't believe in themselves before, where they just felt really good about themselves.
Are you the coach that you wished would have been?
Yeah, I think so. Yes, yes.
Sometimes that's even a way to heal yourself.
Yeah. So a version of the company that we haven't gotten to yet.
Yeah.
The thing that I'm hoping to do at some point in the evolution of this business is I would love to do something with public education. I would love to teach high schoolers how to communicate more effectively, how to present themselves more confidently, and not focus on all this stuff that I think is just not so important.
All the credentials? What do you mean?
Well, you know, when it comes to I was a terrible presenter in high school. And I think what got focused on was, you know, try not to say And I can't even remember what it focused on, but it was just, it didn't help me. It was scary and I would rush through it. And the best thing I could do was sit down afterwards. And I never had the experience of anybody sort of rewarding me for the risk that I took.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
And one of the most consistently productive things that we do is it's like the opposite of criticism. You know, we start with what people did right.
Yeah.
And we build from there. You know, so we're all about rewarding people for taking the risk and having them feel that reward, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I think kind of a side effect of what we're doing is when a company brings us in to work with folks to help them bring these skills to these folks, the people who brought us in are in the room too, and they're seeing how we work with their people. And so I think they're learning, they aren't criticizing, but everybody in this room is learning what I want them to learn, but they aren't making anybody feel like crap for having taken that
inadequate
risk.
Inadequate, right.
What I witness other people doing is, you know, they think they're helping, but, you know, somebody will present to the room and the first thing they'll say is, yeah, that thing you're doing with your hand, don't do that. That's really distracting. And I counted 27 And you said like 47 times, stop saying like. You know, they think they're being helpful by focusing on all these things that they shouldn't be doing. And, you know, I think everybody likes to have ideas and likes to, I think everybody does really like to criticize, actually. And they think they're being helpful. But really, the most important thing that people need is their attention in the right place when they're presenting themselves. And what we do is we put their attention on their message and on their audience and off of themselves. And what the world tends to accidentally do to people is it tends to put people's attention on themselves. That's why so many people just fall to pieces when they get up in front of a room full of people, because all they can see is themselves standing up in front of that room full of people looking at them.
Mm-hmm.
And they can hardly even see the audience. All they can see is eyes reflecting their attention back on them, and they can't think.
Yeah.
So going back to your question, am I the coach that I wanted to have? Yeah, absolutely. I would have loved to have had somebody take me aside and tell me what's important.
Yeah.
Kind of the bigger picture that we don't exactly get to when we work with professionals in firms, the bigger picture that I would have loved somebody to tell me about when I was in high school is it's my career isn't really about me. It's about the people that I help.
Yeah.
And so here's what I have been telling my kids. It's one of my favorite things that I've been doing as a parent. I've been telling my kids, pay attention to what you like to do so that when you get to college, you can actually focus on what you like to do and start thinking about who you want to help by doing that thing.
Yeah.
My oldest is a freshman right now, and he's actually doing something he wanted to do. It wasn't this big, huge question mark that I think a lot of folks get to college and then just start asking the question, what am I interested in?
Yeah, but it's a wonderful way to giving back in this particular direction. Like based on your work that you've done so far, there's a population that you see in high school where you would like to give them some of the skills that you didn't get.
Right. Yeah. Both in terms of presenting themselves and in terms of just thinking about who they can be in the world.
Yeah.
You know, they can be a real difference maker, and what they need to be thinking about is what kind of a difference do they want to make, and who do they want to impact. And I think unfortunately, in the absence of people having them think in that direction, what they're thinking about is, well, what can I be? You know, and you know, we live in this sort of celebrity.
And what industry needs, you know,
right.
is developing.
Well, and what's kind of crazy is, you know, we've got a culture that celebrates like just sort of fame, you know, so people grow up saying, well, I don't know what I want to do, but I'd like to be famous and I'd like to be rich.
Yeah.
You know, and it's, it
yeah, that's what reality TV is promoted.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. It's not so much about the impact on yourself that you want to focus on. And to me, it's not even so much what you want to do specifically, although you should pay attention to what you like to do, but it's more like, what difference do you want to make?
Yeah. And I would add to that too, how to contribute, you know, how can I add a purpose or make our world a better place?
Right.
Where can I plug myself in to what's going on in the world and then carve out a little place to really build up something great?
Right. That's the story of the meaning that you create. It's to me, that is your story. Again, it's not about you. It's about the world around you.
Yes.
Your story is all about the difference that you're making out there. And you get to say if it's going to be a positive difference or not.
Yeah, because we're all in this together.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, right. I think this is a nice place for us to finish our conversation.
Okay, sounds
good.
It
went really fast again. But thank you for all the gems that you have shared. I like the way that you were able to talk about your fear and anxiety and how you work through it and more about your upbringing. And, you know, none of us grew up in perfect homes. Mm. And so, you know, we all have different things that we have to work, you know, that is our life work, you know, in our family or our thinking. And so I like the way you were, you know, have found ways to also plug into the world and, express yourself in a great way.
Thank you.
Great. Well, thanks so much for being here, Pete.
My pleasure. Thanks for inviting me. This was really fun.
Oh, good. And thanks, Mike Cabea, for the photography and sound engineering.
Thank you, Mike.
Thank you for tuning in for another authentic conversation with We Mentor Mondays with Nancy's podcast program. Do you want to promote your business and grow in your leadership skills? Here are a few ways you can promote your business and get leadership help through We Mentor, Inc. You can be a podcast guest. Challenge yourself to share who you are on air. We'll help you out. Secondly, you can sponsor our podcast program. You can invest a small fee to have you and your company name announced at the beginning and end of one or more shows. The third way that you can promote your business and grow in your leadership skills is you can set up an individual strategy session to do work one-on-one with me, focusing on specific life and leadership issues and skills you want to acquire. Or the fourth way is you can join an entrepreneurial leadership and mentoring lab. These ELM labs start throughout the year. They are small groups of 5 to 9 business owners who are out to profoundly shift their lives and lead with authenticity. In 2016, I became a registered yoga instructor and mindfulness meditation teacher. I also became certified online with Brené Brown's Brave Leadership and Courage Works courses to learn an effective process of being all in, falling, getting up, and trying again. In turn, I can mentor others in how to dare greatly and rise strong. I feel better equipped to help you forge ahead in these times of great uncertainty. Our Entrepreneurial Leadership and Mentoring Lab process is an integrated approach to leadership development. We do yoga, meditation, and leadership revolution skill setting. Yes, we will help you learn how to strengthen your body, strengthen your mind, and increase your emotional stamina as part of our leadership development process, along with learning about real-world business planning and strategic planning. We do what works. Get involved, get started. You can reach me at 612-804-8920 or go to wementor.com and connect with us. Lastly, if you like our podcast program, help us keep it going. You can donate to our program. Just go to the wementor.com website, click on Buy button, and fill in the donation amount that you would like to contribute. We appreciate any and all contributions. See you next week.